Today on Straight Talk Africa, we look at the significance of the 72nd session of the United Nations General Assembly. We also discuss the relationship between Africa and the world body. And Nigerian President Muhammad Buhari says Africa's commitment to democracy remains unshaken. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we are discussing the significance of the relationship between Africa and the United Nations.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday addressed the United Nations General Assembly for the first time. My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more.
We meet at a time of both immense promise and great peril. I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
And your people first. He said the scourge of our planet is a group of rogue regimes. He told the assembled body of world leaders.
Our success depends on a coalition of strong and independent nations that embrace their sovereignty to promote security, prosperity, and peace for themselves and for the world. We do not expect diverse countries to share the same cultures, traditions, or even systems of government, but we do expect all nations to uphold these two core sovereign duties, to respect the interests of their own people and the rights of every other sovereign nation.
International reaction to President Trump's speech was largely positive. Referring to North Korean President Kim Jong-un and his regime,
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
Thanking Security Council members China and Russia for their support, he said it is far past time for all nations to isolate the hostile regime until it ceases its hostile behavior. And the American president joined several African leaders calling for reforms of the international body.
And Zambia believes that the UN reforms which have been launched will be incomplete without meaningful reform to the Security Council.
Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Earlier Wednesday, VOA's Esther Githuyu Ewart on our Africa 54 News program spoke with UN correspondent Margaret Beshear about what some African heads of state have addressed at the UNGA. Here are some of the highlights.
Today we heard from Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He focused more on economy, climate change, those sorts of issues. I didn't hear him speak at all about any of the conflicts on the African continent. He did really focus on development, like the Sustainable Development Goals. He talked about cooperation with the UN on the peacekeeping front. President Ouattara of Ivory Coast, they're joining the Security Council in January. They were elected to a two-year term this past June. He said that they have a unique experience of being a country that went through conflict, was helped by the UN, was helped by UN peacekeepers, and have come out of it. And they're going to share that experience. They're going to bring that experience with them to the Security Council in January, where they hope to seek, he hoped to promote fair and practical compromise to solve conflicts and crises throughout the world. Mr. Ouattara also spoke about terrorism, and he said that Africa cannot be the soft underbelly in the war on terror. It needs to kind of step up its efforts on that front. And he also spoke about climate change, which is something that African leaders are really concerned about.
Now, Margaret, there are interesting reports that President Donald Trump is scheduled to address African leaders on the sidelines of UNGA. What do we know?
Yes, in a little while today, a short time from now, he'll be having lunch, a working lunch, with a group of African leaders at the hotel nearby to the UN. So they'll have an opportunity to discuss what's on their minds.
We'll definitely follow up on that, Margaret. But who are the other African leaders expected to address UNGA later on today?
Well, we have a few more coming up today. President Zuma of South Africa, Macky Sall of Senegal, the King of Swaziland is going to address the General Assembly, and President of the Congo, Mr. Nguse.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Now, joining us here in our Washington studio is Clarissa Kayosa-Shegun, a development and human rights consultant based here in Washington, D.C. I have to say, frankly, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you one more time on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you for inviting me back. I am honored to be back as well.
You're most welcome. And Eric Kashambuzi, a former United Nations executive, is the author of 10 books, including The Paradox of Hunger and Abundance, and Critical Issues in African Development. He joins us from New York. Well, again, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly gratified to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome, sir. Let me immediately. What is your immediate reaction to U.S. President Donald Trump's first address to the world body?
Well, your initial reaction is, is one of, I don't know how to put it, but the fact that he called the North Korean president Rocket Man, that wasn't really a good thing to do in a general assembly like that. Mm-hmm. But generally, I felt like it was a wake-up call for African nations. His message was really America first, and everything America. And it's a wake-up call for African nations to know that they need to do what they have to do for their nations. African leaders should take care of their people and not look outside for help. I think When people look to other, like Western countries, for help, and you're getting this kind of message, you really need to pull your socks up and decide, we need to do what is right for our own people so that we can be self-sufficient and be able to get the respect that Africa needs in the global economy.
Were you surprised that the U.S. president was that very, very candid?
No, I wasn't.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we expect of him. That's his usual speech.
I see.
So as much as it hurts, it's the truth.
I see.
Yes.
Eric, what about you? What was your immediate reaction to U.S. President Trump's first address to the world body?
Well, I listened to what he said. I think he covered a wide range of things. He talked about the issue of sovereignty, that the sovereignty of nations must be respected. He also talked about democracy and human rights. And I think that's what we need right now in Africa. We talk about democracy, but democracy doesn't appear to be in existence. We talk about human rights. We talk about the rule of law. We have had elections. All these things haven't proven to be useful for the people in the continent of Africa. When you talked about America first, some people have raised issues. But I think first and foremost, one has to take care of his or her family before you can help somebody else. Even when you are in the plane, they say if there is a shortage of oxygen, you put a mask on your face first before you can help somebody else. So I think from that point of view, I think that this speech is going to go down in history as a speech delivered by somebody who I think means well and wants to do good for humankind around the world. On the issue of security and North Korea, it's a matter of interpretation. As I've seen some people who use words that they don't mean them, or they want to use that as a negotiating strategy. So I think overall, I like people who speak their minds so that you know where they stand. In diplomacy, people tend to twist things here and there, and then they end up doing something that they didn't say. So from this point of view, I think I was a bit happy that we have a president that can stand in the General Assembly Hall and say what is on his mind without fear or favor.
But what about some who might say, wait a minute, all presidents, in fact, when they come to the world body, that's pretty much how they speak, that they are able and willing to talk the talk without necessarily being able to walk that particular talk.
That is the people have talked about that, and I have been with the United Nations, as you know, since 1975. The nature of diplomacy is that you are supposed to talk the soft language. And sometimes what people say is not what they do, because sometimes pressures from different angles force them to digress from what they have already said. We already know about climate change. During the Obama administration, climate change was high on the agenda. Now we see it's off the agenda. So sometimes it depends upon the circumstances. Sometimes you want to do the right thing, but circumstances change and you are forced to do something else. There are some people now who are looking at this issue of refugees and immigrants. There are people who believe that refugees and immigrants should be treated like ordinary people. They should enjoy their rights and freedoms. But there are others who feel that when they come in their countries, they create unnecessary inconveniences in terms of sharing social services, in terms of involving themselves in politics, and that creates an environment that makes the leaders, even though they want to help them, find themselves in a situation that their hands are tied. And that's why, to avoid running into some difficulties, they tend to use the language that is sometimes subject to different interpretations.
I see.
I have been involved, yes.
I see. What about you, Clarissa? There are some people back in Africa who frankly do not see any justification for what they call these annual rituals, really, where presidents and heads of government use a lot of their taxpayers' money to just go to New York, in their words, to pretty much wine and dine. That there's nothing tangible, really, that they take back home.
That's very true. I mean, these things happen. You find people from poor countries wanting to live the life when they come to the UN meetings and bringing in tourages that are so unnecessary and using, citizens' funds that should be going to development. So really the feeling from most of the people I have spoken to is that it's, you know, we need to cut down on things like that. We do not have to have a whole entourage of 70 people or more for a meeting which doesn't even yield anything. They come back, they make all these promises they make, and then go back to where they were, you know, continue what they were doing and not implementing whatever they came to talk about here in New York. So it really is a waste of money.
You know, there are some situations, in fact, where, for example, an African president was reportedly staying in a suite in Manhattan of between $15,000 to $20,000 a day. And that president happens to come from one of the poorest countries on earth. And yet, the president of the United States, Barack Obama himself, was actually paying less than $10 in his suite. How do you react to that?
I mean, that just doesn't make sense. When people are suffering, and one of the things I have heard them talk about is youth, women, and children empowerment. How do you empower them if you're going to come to the, to New York and spend $20,000 on a hotel room? And that $20,000 could pay so many, a lot of school fees for a lot of children. So it just doesn't make sense. It really is something that we need to address as Africans and African leaders. I don't know what happens to leaders when they come into power. They make all the promises they make during election time, but when they're in power, it's a different story.
It's very interesting that when that president was actually criticized by a New York Times reporter, he actually shot back and said he doesn't like this idea of journalists asking him about where he stays and how much he pays, because after all, he spent many years sleeping in tents and trenches. How do you react to that?
Well, you see, this is a foundational thing that needs to be worked out. Just because you spent years suffering doesn't mean you make it up later on in life with government resources. It just doesn't make sense. It's not right.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Before we pause for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, and don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag UNAfrica, and we'll air some of your comments later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
The theme for this session, focusing on people, striving for peace, and a decent life for all on a sustainable planet, provides us an opportunity to evaluate the existing multilateral approaches to address the challenges affecting our peoples. These, Mr. President, include threats to socio-economic development and international peace and security.
The last year, the international community came together to focus on the need for gender equality, youth empowerment, social inclusion, and the promotion of education, creativity, and innovation. The frontiers of good governance, democracy, including hold free and fair elections, and the enthronement of the rule of law are expanding everywhere, especially in Africa. Our faith in democracy remains firm and unshaken. Our regional organization, ECOWAS, came together to uphold democratic principles in the Gambia, as we had done previously in Cote d'Ivoire.
Very interesting, of course. That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, and of course, earlier it was Zambian President Edgar Lungu. What about you, Eric? You listened. Your reaction?
Well, my reaction is that when leaders come to the United Nations, they do not come to tell the world what is exactly going on in their countries. And what I have seen is that leaders in Africa, maybe because of the way they are selected, they tend to be accountable to the outside world. And this is something that we need to address. The question that arises is, to what extent are these people patriotic? Some people believe that they fought, and once they have gotten into power, then they have a right to compensate themselves to the maximum extent possible. And issues like democracy are not really coming from the people themselves. They are imposed on the people of Africa because it is a requirement that you must have an elected government. And sometimes we have ended up legitimizing illegitimate regimes, regimes that come to power through the use of force are illegitimate in my view. And therefore, they should not be given an opportunity to take off their military fatigues, put on the civilian uniforms or suits, and then pretend that they are ruling according to the wishes of the people. That isn't happening. And the people of Africa are aware of that. What I think is making me a little bit happy is that the people of Africa are beginning to talk about change, transformation, transformation of the mind. Unless you transform the mind, the rest is not going to be done. So when the leaders come to the United Nations, first they come to address their people at home to say, although I come from a poor country, I am also living in the most expensive hotel. I'm also standing on the UN rostrum, and I can speak as equally as a leader from the richest and most powerful country. That is the image they come to present. And as has been said already, I wonder why somebody who has been receiving donations should come to New York and stay at Waldorf Astoria and rent cars for 24 hours and come with an entourage of over 20 people when you can only seat 6 people in the General Assembly Hall. So we need to talk to our people back home to understand what goes on in the United Nations. I have been there. I know there was a meeting of the for women, and one country sent 20 women. So most of them were doing their own things, came to visit their children, came to attend to other businesses. Some of them will frankly tell you they are here to relax and rest. Until we change the mindset of our people, until we change the mindset of the outside world that is pumping money into our countries that is wasted, we shall continue to talk about these things and nothing will come out of it. And I think that's the sad part. But I think a beginning is being made. People are waking up. People are talking. And soon, hopefully, the situation will get better for everybody on our continent.
It is very interesting that you used the phrase regarding the manner in which African presidents are chosen and the way they are selected. What about the fact that these individuals, in fact, say they are elected? They go through elections periodically.
Well, that's a requirement in order to get foreign aid, in order to be assisted in the, even at the United Nations, you must have elections. So what is the meaning of elections? First, the people must make their choice freely. Where have we had a free and fair election? Let me take my own country, Uganda. Since the first election in 1958, then 1961, 62, 1980, and beyond, we have never had an election that has been acceptable to everybody. So do you call that an election? The election that we had in 2016, the opposition believes it won the election, but the results were declared in favor of the president. And I think people believe that the Electoral Commission that is not independent played a hand in that. The matter went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court unanimously endorsed the election results. So is that an election? Is that democracy? That, I don't think, is what we need.
I see.
An election is where people express their opinion without fear or favor. And we don't have that in Africa, at least in some of the countries that I'm aware of.
What about Karalisa? How do you respond to that? Do you, in some way, or shape, or form, agree with Eric?
I agree with him.
That, in fact, a lot of elections on the African continent are not really meant for the primary stakeholder, the African citizen, but rather for the development partners?
Exactly. I agree with that, because as you may have seen, the past couple of elections that have taken place, which were flawed, and thank God for Kenya that, you know, the judiciary said we have to do a recount. Mm-hmm. But yes, they are done for development partners. It's not for the individual, you know, the common citizen. Because even after elections, those poor people become even poorer. There's no change that they see. Some countries, like, you know, not to name names, but there's a lot of poverty going on in some of these countries. So you wonder what happened to the promises that you made. So it's like you put out a resume to mm-hmm. your development partner, you know, to say this is who I am and this is what I'm going to do and this is what I have done in the past. And your development partner says, okay, we can go ahead and pick your resume, or whether it's a resume or a project plan, would take yours and you take it, and after that you're taking care of yourself and not the citizen. So it is for the development partner, not for the individual citizen.
What about an individual like Nigerian President Major General Muhammadu Buhari, retired but certainly not tired? What do you think when he says that our faith in democracy remains unshaken? He obviously was chosen democratically in Abuja mm-hmm. in 2015.
I haven't really followed the Nigerian politics so much, but I believe there was some people were happy after the election. I think most of the population, they said that the elections were fair, from what I hear, anyway. Mm. And I think they had been tired of the old regime and they were ready to move on to this new one. So I think there was some you know, there was some good in that election, from my belief. Mm. So when he says that faith in democracy is not shaken...
Is unshaken. Remains unshaken.
Mm. I think he believes that there's still hope for Nigeria in that area of democracy.
Especially, in fact, a lot of observers say that was probably the first ever election in the history of Nigeria since independence, 1960, we're talking 1960, mm-hmm. that was actually free, fair, credible, and transparent.
Yes.
And you know that the then incumbent president, Goodluck Jonathan, conceded a defeat with grace.
That reminds me of our very own KK conceding to
Frederick Chiluba.
Yes, to Frederick Chiluba. So, yeah, when he says that democracy remains unshaken or unshakable, I believe Nigeria is heading somewhere. Nobody's ever happy with what's going on in a nation. You know, you vote someone in and you have high expectations. And when those expectations are not met, you feel like this is not right. This is not what we voted for. And you're ready to move on to the next phase. I think as Africans, we also need to get to a place where we know that things cannot change immediately. You have to give democracy a chance, if it's democracy, or the new person you voted into power a chance to do what they're supposed to do or what they promised to do. There are some economies that are so bad, and a new person coming into power cannot just change things overnight.
Right.
So you need to know that we need time. It may not even be that person that you have voted into power who will make that change, but he will start the change and the next people will build onto that. But what we see in Africa is you may have a good person come into power and the next person who comes in destroys everything that that person did. So there's always that, you know, that shaking and unfortunately not good governance, which draws the nations back.
Your point is well taken. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in my social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Ishaka. Each year, the UNGA brings together leaders from 193 countries to address issues that can bring positive change in the lives of millions of people around the world and to uphold the Sustainable Development Goals of the 2030 Agenda. We're exploring the African issues that are being addressed in this international gathering, which leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what are the most pressing African issues that the UNGA needs to address? Well, you guys had a lot to say on this topic, so let's start with a tweet from Abel Elibikrari from Tanzania, who writes, inclusivity of African nations in the UN Security Council, peacekeeping in DRC, Congo, and South Sudan, and the impact of climate change in Africa. Well, and we also know that there was a humanitarian meeting on South Sudan this morning, so let's hope that there was some progress made there. Let's go to another tweet from Vincent Maloba, who says, recent killings of Burundi refugees by Congolese troops and militias, all perpetrators should be brought to justice. It's very horrendous. Thank you, Vincent, for your comment. And now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Peter Ocheng in Kenya, who writes, Africa should begin taking care of herself first. Drive Africa's fundamental agenda before you push for international issues. Work on the continent's systems of governance. Enhance transparency and integrity in Africa's institutions first. Let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Dan Kuikriza from Uganda, who writes, the United Nations should be mandated to directly intervene in the domestic politics of countries when the situation gets out of hand. Do not wait for war, only to have to evacuate people from the conflict. Well, as we know, that is a very controversial opinion, but one that is shared by others. Let's go to our last Facebook comment from Thema Lutungu, who writes, the United Nations should address how African nations are corrupt and mismanage taxpayers' money. The UN should also look at how the rigging of elections in most African countries creates instability on the continent. Well, thank you, everyone, for sharing your thoughts with us. A reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Or to comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or to simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. To watch us live on your mobile device, just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a three-nation Africa visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Tanzania, Shaka Solly talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered, reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka on the next Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Thanks again for sharing with us some social media reaction from the continent. And of course, thanks again. Today's topic is about the significance of the relationship between Africa and the United Nations. Our distinguished guests are Clarissa Kayosa Shegun and Erica Kashambuzi, who joins us from the VOA Bureau in New York. Well, Clarissa and Eric, once again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. In a moment, we'll hear from Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who addressed the General Assembly yesterday. But first, let's hear from the outgoing Liberian President, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who addressed the UNGA just 3 weeks ahead of historic elections in the West African nation.
I address you for the last time as I bring to closure my two terms of elected office. Liberia is just 22 days away from historic legislative and presidential elections. It will mark the first time in 73 years that political power will be handed over peacefully and democratically from one elected leader to another.
The theme for this session, focusing on people, striving for peace and a decent life, who would lose if all the people each day were getting enough calories to support their bodies? Who would lose if all young people, children, accessed education to achieve?
Well, that was, of course, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni at the UNGA in New York speaking, or rather addressing the assembly yesterday. And of course, earlier we heard from Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Would you like to react to that, Eric? I think these are very interesting messages here, except that sometimes maybe are they perhaps being addressed by what some would call wrong messengers or what?
I think the president of Liberia made an impressive statement. I watched it from the beginning to the end. She said she was the first woman to be elected in Africa, which is true. But before then, there was a president in Liberia who wasn't elected and was a woman.
Head of state.
She also, head of state.
Yes, Ruth.
And yes. Yeah. And so that was a first statement that she, points that she made that was interesting. And she also talked about that the time had come for women to take charge. That was also very important. But what was significant in all that she said was that there's going to be a smooth transition from her administration to the next administration. That is something that we haven't seen a lot of in Africa, except as you are discussing in Nigeria and in Ghana and in Zambia when Kaunda stepped down gracefully. So that was a moving speech. But then when you listen to what President Museveni said, and I come from Uganda, what he said is not what is happening at home. He talked about education. The education in Uganda has virtually collapsed. Going from grade 1 to grade 7 without learning anything, that is not education. To educate children, they must be provided with school lunch. It was agreed by the AU that all countries should provide school lunch for children, because school lunch enables children to stay in school and to perform better, especially girls. But when you don't do that, then the children drop out. And when they drop out, they get married. And before you realize, they have children. So whatever he said, there's nothing he said that I agreed with. He just came to tell the people here of what should be done, but not what he is doing in Uganda.
Eric,
and when you compare...
Eric, when you talk about education, I guess that you really have to give credit to the Ugandan president that he actually introduced universal primary education and universal secondary education. What about that?
Okay, first, introducing universal primary education is okay in principle. And I know the World Bank put in a lot of money for that education. That money was supposed to build schools. That money was supposed to construct buildings, construct houses for teachers, bring in textbooks, train teachers, so that the people, the children, can learn something. What happened with that money? What happened with universal primary education? It was only said, it was not implemented. In fact, what happened was that schools were downgraded, others were completely closed down. You know that, I know that. So when people talk about universal primary education, universal secondary education, it's not a question of talking, it is seeing what is produced after the talk has been done. If you know in Uganda now, most of the so-called graduates are unemployable because they don't have quality education. Why are we getting people from Kenya and from other countries to come and work in Uganda when over 80% of our graduates cannot find jobs? So they did not get quality education. They just spent time at school. Some of them didn't. They graduated, so-called, and have not been able to use that education to find a job in this globalized economy. So when we talk about education, when we talk about elections, we should go beyond what they're saying and look at exactly what is happening in order to make sense of what is going to happen once these children have graduated, what is going to happen when an election has taken place. I think what's happening in Africa, particularly in my country, Uganda, is not what we would wish for. And that's why I was listening previously. Somebody said that we should have the UN intervening in internal affairs of states whose governments are unwilling or unable to maintain law and order. And as you know, the United Nations adopted a resolution on responsibility to protect, that if human rights are abused, the United Nations has the right to intervene and correct the situation. And when you have a government or a leader that wants to change the constitution in order to stay in power indefinitely, I think the international body has an obligation and a duty to step in and make sure things of that nature do not happen. But people will tell you, standards of democracy, standards of governance in Africa and other developing countries are not the same as those in the developed countries. I think this is double standard, and the UN should address this problem before it gets out of hand.
Thank you very much. What about you, Karalisa? You obviously, you watched and heard two African heads of state. One, the first female president of Liberia, in fact, in Africa. She has served two terms, each six terms, 12 years. She's basically hoping and willing to preside over a peaceful transition. The other is Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power since 1986. As we talk, there is a move in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, where members of parliament are introducing a bill so that they could remove the age cap of 75 so that President Yoweri Museveni in 2021 can be eligible to run again. Is this because perhaps President Museveni, in your view, happens to be God's gift to Uganda? What is it?
I'll answer the Museveni question. I'm not sure. He probably thinks he is God's gift to Uganda. But this is a perfect example of what Eric had said earlier about African leaders being more accountable to the outside world than to their own people. And you had also said earlier that the right message and the wrong carrier. So this is really a typical example of what of both examples that you gave. Unfortunately, African leaders never know when it's time to give up, when it's time to hang their coats and say, I'm done.
Are they leaders? Well, if in fact they don't know, are they in fact leaders? Because if you're a leader, the assumption is that you're leading people.
Exactly. A leader will build other people, mm-hmm. will grow other leaders. So when you feel like you're the only one who can do what you're doing in a nation, then you haven't managed well. A manager manages people by training others to take over. So if you have been in power for over 30 years and you feel like you're the only one who can do the job, then you haven't done a good job. You're supposed to be able to gladly hand over, like Ms. Sirleaf. She's handing over. She's done her two terms. She's handing over. And I'm hoping that she has also raised other people who can take over the work that she has been doing. Mm. But as for Museveni, 30 years is way too much. It's time to hand over to younger blood, people who can take over now, carry the mantle, take the country to higher levels. Mm. So if you're going to come to the UN and tell the UN what you're doing and what's going on and your business plans and how you have told the farmers to make their prices lower than everybody else and the education situation there, when you know that that's not what's going on in a country, what justice are you doing for your own people? So that's why I go back to the statement that President Trump made about America first. When are we going to take ourselves as important enough to take care of ourselves, you know? We need to get to a point where we're taking care of us. And when you have done all you can and you realize that I have done what I can and I need a higher power to help me to the next level, then that's acceptable. But not sitting down, taking handouts, and then, you know, continue taking handouts and not wanting to give up, wanting to give up power or letting someone else take over.
But if you ask President Museveni why he is doing that, he will probably tell you that he is succumbing to pressure, the pressure of his supporters, people who believe in him.
I don't believe that. I think they make those things up. And you see, they get to a point where they have a certain group of people that they give, you know, they feed. And these are the ones who go out and talk of the greatness of this leader. We need to vote for him.
People who some say are perhaps patriotic to their stomachs.
Exactly.
The patriotic stomachs of their families.
Exactly. And it's so unfortunate because you find that some of these civic educators out there, human rights activists, have been silenced in these countries. They're not able to speak out and to educate the masses on what they should expect from their leaders. They're thrown in jail. You say something that is going to help a citizen, that is right, and you're thrown in jail by the powers that be. Because they do not want, they think that is dissent. You're not, you're being insubordinate to the leadership of the country. So when things like that happen, you need to look at yourself.
Very interesting. I was doing some homework, Lisa, just before the show, and I was surprised to find that when you look at the UN peacekeeping missions, majority of the UN peacekeepers really reside in the Africa, on the African continent.
That's very true.
Why?
I don't know why we fight each other. It's a resource battle. Who controls the resources? Because when you look at some these nations that have UN peacekeepers, they have natural resources. So it's really who controls the resources. And instead of working things in a way that we all get a share of what's, you know, what the country has to offer, greed takes over. One person wants to be in control. You cannot, in your lifetime, you know, utilize all the wealth in a nation. You leave it. Even Solomon, in all his wisdom and wealth, left everything he had.
Does it perhaps also mean that Africa may probably be more democratically challenged than the rest of the world?
I like to think so sometimes. Sometimes you think, was democracy good for us? Or, you know, I don't know what goes on with us. It's like there's no loyalty amongst the African nations, loyalty to the people that voted you into power.
if they voted you into power at all.
If they voted you into power at all.
Because in a lot of elections, frankly, there is abundant evidence that suggests that a lot of results of some of these elections do not reflect the will of the people. Mm-hmm. Rather, they reflect the will of either the individual who announces the results or those people who actually count the votes.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know what happened in Zambia not too long ago.
What happened?
We never got to hear the results. I mean, we never got the petition heard.
The petition, of course, was essentially
thrown out.
Thrown out.
Never
on
to
a
be
technicality.
Heard. Yes. Never
Why?
To be heard. The powers be felt that it wasn't, you know, in their interest to have those elections results recounted.
But the powers that be, as far as Zambia is concerned, say that you actually do enjoy an independent judiciary.
It's unfortunate. I do not believe the Zambian judiciary is independent at all.
I see.
Yes.
I see. Eric, let me come to you. Any particular reason, really, why Africa hosts the largest peacekeepers in as far as this planet Earth is concerned? You are an insider.
Well, you are right. I think most of the peacekeepers, UN peacekeepers, are found in Africa. And it is in Africa where we are fighting more than anywhere else. And why is this? People are advancing all sorts of theories. If you look at the Great Lakes region, people are going back to Malthusian theories that we are fighting because we are too many. The carrying capacity of the land is not enough. So people are fighting for resources. And the solution is birth control. That's what some people will tell you. Instead of understanding why people are fighting, they will come up with these theories that that's the reason why people are fighting. I don't think that's why people are fighting. People are fighting because there are some people who believe that God created them to rule over others. And you find those are in a minority, so they suppress others, and you end up with fighting. When they are not fighting, they are preparing to fight. That's one thing, that this Malthusian theory, that there are too many people, that the carrying capacity of the land cannot, therefore they have to fight for the limited resources that they have. That's one theory. The second theory is that these countries have tremendous resources, natural resources. So in order to get to these resources, they try to create instability. And the force is coming from outside, that you instigate some leaders in the neighboring country. They work with some selected groups in the countries they want to attack. And the fighting starts. That is how it is. When I was on a mission to DRC, I talked with many, many people, and we are trying to get to the root cause of the problem. I think finally they made it clear that if we didn't have external factors interfering in the domestic affairs of African countries, this fighting would be limited. But you have got people who are pushing either for their own national interests during the Cold War that ended. Now we have a new Cold War. Of course, Africa is now under attack from many sources, and they are dividing us, and we are fighting so that these people can come and get what they want. Unless we understand the root cause of the problem, we are not going to solve it. I come from the Great Lakes region myself. I know the problems. The problems largely is external. That's why you see people like Museveni. He came here, nobody condemned him. They know what's going on in Uganda. He's going to change the constitution. Why did they even allow him to come to the UN when they know what's going on in Uganda? In Uganda, we are not even making progress in all areas of human endeavor. I'm an economist, I'm a demographer, plus other things. You find that we are not making progress. And at the time of independence, Uganda was ahead of Kenya and Tanzania in many social areas. Now, Uganda is trailing Kenya and Tanzania, even in per capita income. That is an issue of governance, nothing else. Uganda has some of the best trained people and experienced people. but either they are outside or they are at home and they are marginalized. So as long as we have leadership of this quality, leadership that is picked by outsiders and imposed on us, and then they allow themselves to be used for the interest of others, Africa will continue to fight.
Thank you.
I hope that what is happening in West Africa might help us to improve things in the Great Lakes region and the Horn of Africa.
Thank you very much. Clarissa, Eric, among other things, talks about the interference of external factors. But frankly, you can't simply talk about external factors, because these external factors have to interact with someone. There has to be a dynamic. There have to be elements on the ground who interact with the external factors.
Well, definitely. I mean, our leaders really, like Eric said, sometimes they're imposed on us. You know, you find a leader who has got all this international backing, comes in and does what makes the funder happy.
Why can't people reject them?
This is what people try to do. And when you have an oppressive government, people are thrown in jail for rejecting people that have been imposed, or rules that have been imposed on them.
The people of Burkina Faso rejected Blaise Compaoré, for example.
I wish that could spread on across Africa. Maybe we'll be a happier people. Honestly, I look forward to the day when people will be able to stand up and say, we reject this. You said you would do this. You haven't done this. It's time for you to pack up. We need new leadership. We need this done. I think we need to make them accountable to the things that they say. I don't know how and when that will happen, but if only that could just spread across Africa, and we have people across the continent standing up for their rights.
What do you think it will take in order for Africans to assert their constitutional rights, their birthrights, really, for that matter?
I think what it would take is hopefully not another genocide, no, but freedom of speech. When you have a leader who allows people to express themselves, then you give room to civic educators, human rights workers, to go around, even to the villages, to let people know who they should vote in, what they should expect, what their needs are. People are not voting according to what they need to progress as citizens of the world. They vote according to what they are told to do in most of the countries. So people don't really know their rights.
So they actually behave as if they are subjects, really.
Exactly.
Who do not have rights, but privileges granted to them.
Exactly.
By some of these individual authorities.
Yes.
Including dictators.
Exactly.
Presidential monarchs.
Yes.
Emperors.
Yes.
Kings.
Yes.
Queens.
All of that.
Very interesting.
So it's like when they have one of these people coming into their villages, it's a privilege. Oh, my goodness, they came to our village and they brought us a bag of mealy meal and a chicken and tomatoes and all of that. So they care about us. They thought of us and they came.
He gave us a rod.
Yes.
As if, in fact, he got it from his own bank account.
From his own pocket, exactly.
Very interesting. Well, unfortunately, Clarissa, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Clarissa Kayosa Shegun and Eric Kashambuzi, who joined us from the VOA Bureau in New York. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.